most lawyers, I think, go into it for very noble reasons. And then we get caught up in the day-to-day and the struggles and the you got to work all the time and you got to, you know, serve your clients first and never yourself and all these things that we do. And we totally lose track of that. And the next thing we know, we wake up and we're like these different people and we've gone on this different path and we're very unhappy as a result.
Welcome to the High Performance Legal Entrepreneur Series. My name is Adam Arkfeld, an entrepreneur, marketer, and seeker of high-performing habits, tips, and strategies. Each week, I'll bring to you an elite performer, a legal expert, or simply a strategy to help you see and follow the path to personal greatness in your firm and life. Thank you for joining us today. Now let's get started. Welcome, everyone, to the High Performance Legal Entrepreneur Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Arkfeld, president and founder of Prevail Legal Marketing. And today, I have Heather Mulder joining me, who is a mindset, leadership, and business development coach for lawyers. Excuse me. Heather, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited to have this conversation. As anyone that listens to my podcast knows, I love talking about mindset. So we're going to talk about that today. And anybody that's on my LinkedIn feed knows that I like talking about goals. So we're going to talk about that today too, because it's the beginning of 2022. So
awesome.
What I'd like to start with is I just want to hear a little bit about your background, about how you got into coaching and your history related to law and then coaching as well.
Sure. So I will try to keep this short, but it's all relevant to what we're talking about today. So I'm one of those really strange people who wanted to be a lawyer since I was really, really young. I was like 10 when I decided I wanted to practice law. Don't ask me why. I have no idea. There were zero lawyers in my family, but I thought it was cool and that's what I wanted to do. And I pretty much had that mindset forever. Went to law school, did all the things, started practicing. And a couple of years into my career, and I was with Big Law pretty much most of my career, I remember it was right before Christmas, like a week before Christmas. I'm driving home. The most wonderful time of the year is playing in the background, and I just burst into tears. If I could have counted on one hand the number of days I had not worked that year, that includes holidays, weekends, all of that, you know. I was miserable. I was looking around at all the attorneys I worked with who were way ahead of me who also seemed miserable. And I'm like, this is just – the profession's broken. Something's wrong. And I got to figure something out. And so I remember getting home that night, complaining to my husband for like the millionth time that year. And he was exasperated, poor man, with me at that point, and looked at me and was like, Heather, you have a choice. Now, needless to say, that did not go over terribly well in the moment, but I woke up the next morning and was like, crap, he's right. So at that point, I kind of knew, okay, either I leave what I wanted to do forever or I try to figure out a way to make it work. And I chose the latter and really did. And that was kind of the beginning of my journey into mindset, into self-awareness, mindfulness, all of the, you know, the things we actually talk about a lot more now. We didn't talk about back then. So none of those words meant anything to me at the time, but ultimately that's what I was really doing. And then it led me to leave the firm I was at because it wasn't a good fit culturally. Went to another firm, which was actually an international big law firm. Started, you know, made partner, built my practice, was on a roll, going along, thought I'd be there forever. And then 10 years ago, this month actually, I was diagnosed with a really aggressive breast cancer. And I did not know it at the time, but it really changed my outlook on who I was, what I wanted to do, and how I wanted to show up in the world. The diagnosis at the time was so aggressive that my doctors were really freaked out about it and were really concerned that it had spread. And honestly, spreading would have meant I wouldn't be here now. So, and my kids were really young. I was only 38. My kids were 2 and 6 at the time. And so it really changes your perception of yourself. It was kind of the beginning of the decoupling of me identifying mostly as a lawyer and starting to see myself differently. And so it was kind of like a new nuance into mindset and self-awareness and figuring out, okay, well, how do I want to define myself? Who do I want to be as I get back from this and move forward? And so I did get back into law and I did keep growing my business and kept going along. But there was this moment a couple of years after I got back into it where I looked back at myself and was like, Okay, I think I was washing dishes at the time. And I don't know if you've ever had this experience, but I had this like experience where I felt like I was looking down on myself. And this person looked like me, but it didn't feel like me anymore. And that was kind of the key moment where I realized, okay, I got to figure it out again and see how has this journey changed me? What do I want out of my life? And ultimately, it led me to leave my legal career and start what I do now, which is mindset leadership coaching and business development coaching for lawyers. So,
wow, that's an amazing story. That's incredible.
Well, thank you.
So there's a lot of things that we could potentially dig into there. You know, what I sort of want to hear about is, so you went through multiple phases being a lawyer, right? And so most people listening to this podcast are actually the lawyer. I want to hear about that first mindset shift going back when you said, you know, it was the holidays, you were crying in your car, and then you said something has to change. And you didn't leave law right then. You didn't leave to be a coach at that point in time. You said, I'm going to make it work. And so that first shift, what changes did you make to make that work? Because I've never been a lawyer myself, but my understanding for these larger law firms is, you know, you kind of have to work. And just correct me if I'm wrong or just tell me how it goes. But you kind of like have to work a lot. So how did you balance that? And you left the firm, I know that, but just talk about that period a little bit.
You do have to work a lot in the sense that it's a client-driven industry. And sometimes the demands are there where you're working a lot more, right? However, you don't have to work as much as you think. And I think lawyers especially, and when I looked around, I noticed that the vast majority of lawyers were unhappy. And the unhappy ones had a lot of common themes. But then I also saw that there were some that really were very happy, and they also had common themes, and there were differences. And the differences were this: the unhappy lawyers defined success completely and utterly based on money, how much they brought in, how many clients they had. Their ego was everything was very tied into them being a lawyer and a very successful lawyer, according to what the world, you know, set. The very happy lawyers didn't care so much about how they were perceived by others. They cared more about what they wanted to say about themselves. And I define that as values. As a coach now, we kind of have this lingo. But back when I was practicing, I didn't know it was values, but it really was. It was reconnecting with what made me want to be a lawyer in the first place. Most lawyers, I think, go into it for very noble reasons. And then we get caught up in the day-to-day and the struggles and you got to work all the time and you got to, you know, serve your clients first and never yourself and all these things that we do. And we totally lose track of that. And the next thing we know, we wake up and we're like these different people and we've gone on this different path and we're very unhappy as a result. So a lot of it was kind of recentering in on what are my values? What is my vision for who I want to be? What I want people to say about me, about my accomplishments, but also about how I showed up every day, how I made other people feel. And I knew that I couldn't show up that way if I continued down that path because I was so unhappy. I was becoming a very not as nice person. Unfortunately, a lot of lawyers, especially in big law, are known not to be the nicest of people at times. And I actually, having been there, don't think they're mean. Most of these people are bad people. It's just that they're so stressed. They're so emotionally exhausted that it comes out that way, right? And that's what I was trying to stay away from. So I started there. And then that helped me create a bigger vision for what I wanted my practice to look like, which then showed me I was in a bad cultural fit for me. So I looked for another firm, which was very entrepreneurial for a big firm, especially at the time that I joined, and would allow me more independence and freedom to build the practice I wanted the way I wanted. I was very particular in how I grew my practice. I had a no a-hole clients policy. I only worked with clients that I really enjoyed working with, who were on a very similar plane as me, who cared about their families, who had the same values I did. They ended up respecting me a whole lot more than my previous clients had at the other firm. They respected my time. Now, that didn't mean I wasn't really busy at times, but they did respect me enough to not call with false emergencies, to be reasonable about their deadlines. And I felt comfortable enough to say no upon occasion. I mean, there were times I had to turn work down because I just couldn't take it on. So all of those things combined is kind of how I built my practice. And it was very values-based, even though I didn't know what it was at the time. But that's what gave me, I guess you could say, gave me permission to create the boundaries I needed that a lot of lawyers don't do.
Now you, when you were at your first law firm, you know, before you made this transition, I know that for me, up until probably 2 to 3 years ago, I've owned my business for 12 years. It was like primarily, I wouldn't say primarily about money, but it was just like money was like a huge driving factor in my success and my happiness and my worth. Like money has always been a big component of my worth until just a couple of years ago when I started realizing it. It probably still is. I'm just now aware of it and working on it. So was that the same for you when you were at your firm? Was the financial piece why you worked so hard and were at that big firm, or was it something else?
It was part of it. So I grew up, and this kind of gets into even more of my backstory, but the way I grew up made me really seek out other people's, I guess, accolades, you could say. And I think a lot of it, I was a high achiever, as most lawyers are. And so I wanted to prove my worth. And part of how you prove yourself, it wasn't about the money in that way, but money was one of those things that proves your worth, right? And so for me, it was more about that because I grew up kind of not poor, but lower middle class. And a lot of the lawyers I was working with came from more money, had a lot of connections. I had zero. So I felt like, oh my God, I'm way behind. And so I have to catch up. And I was always in this catch up kind of a phase. And I grew up also with an alcoholic mother. My parents divorced when they were really young. I grew up with my mom. She was an alcoholic my entire childhood. Thankfully, she's a recovering alcoholic now and has been for many years. But it really impacted me and made me decide, okay, I want to go out and be quote unquote successful. And successful, part of it was the money. But it was also, you know, am I respected? How do people view me? And so it was really interesting because when I had that epiphany of, oh my God, you know, what am I doing? I'm miserable. I realized part of the reason I had gotten to that point is because my family had put me up on this pedestal of Heather is the success story, you know, and I felt like I couldn't let anybody down. So it was really scary to make those different decisions at first because I was worried that, well, what does this mean? How are they going to view me?
Yeah, well, I think this is a really important conversation for anyone that's a high achiever or, you know, a lawyer that's achieving or people that are, so you can achieve in different ways, right? You can achieve to get the title or the status, you can achieve for money, you can achieve, you know, the rise up the ranks in a firm. And understanding why we're that way is just really important. And I know that, I don't know exactly what it was for me, but my entire life achievement has been part of my worth. And I can't pinpoint it. You know, I talked to a therapist one time that said, you may not recall why it happened, but it's imprinted on you and your body and your psyche, and your psyche remembers why it happened. And so it doesn't really matter what the reason was, but you are achieving because of something in your past. And that's a defining characteristic of you.
Yeah. And it may be a value. I mean, a lot of lawyers have accomplishment, achievement, something like that as an actual value, which is fine as long as you understand what it is and you learn how to manage it with all the other values that you have. Because values, it's funny, they can conflict with one another, right? So I have a service value. I love to serve. That's one of my big values. Family is another value. Well, serving my clients can sometimes conflict with serving my family. So it's hard, right? But one thing I would say to that, and this is what I've learned, is achievement is obviously very important to me as well. I think it is to most lawyers, if not all of us, right? Who goes through law school and business owners and entrepreneurs. And I think your podcast is not just for lawyers, but more entrepreneurial lawyers, right?
Like, right. Yeah.
You have to be achievement-based to some extent to make that work. What I've learned is, yes, there have to be external metrics, monetary numbers that you meet, right? We all do that for our goals. But instead of obsessing over those, start paying a lot more attention to your input as opposed to your output, because you don't have control over the full output. You can control what you put in. You can control how hard you work, what you do and do not do, whether you learn from mistakes, whether you choose to get back up, whether you quit, whether you all those things. You can work really, really hard and still not get what you want. So when we only look at output, it can be really disappointing and really demotivating too. So focus more on the input. And that's kind of one of the things that shifted for me at that point. And funny thing is, when you start focusing more on that, you tend to actually do better. That's what I've found in me and my clients. So,
well, I have one of my goals this year is to have, an outbound caller generating leads for us, you know, like warm leads, cold leads, whatever, a sales development rep. And I feel very uncomfortable in the sales sort of world. It's just not a place where I do well. And I reframed this goal to be, I want to learn how to generate 5 appointments a week using outbound, technologies or cold callers or whatever. And it's like, I reframed it as like almost like a prob, like a puzzle. Like, yes. I want to learn how to do this. And I mean, you have to be careful. You can't just like read a book and like not actually take any action. But for me, learning means I'm going to learn something and then I'm going to do this thing and see how it works. And it's more of like a analysis than I have to hit this goal. And it's all focused on the goal. Like, it's more focused on the process for me. And yes. That is like really actually made me excited about the goal, because I really dislike anything related to sales. I just like will avoid it at all costs. But now it's like, oh, it's almost like I'm solving like an interesting problem. And that's been helpful for at least the first, it's January 7th. So it's been 1 week of effort. It's been good for the first 7 days of the year.
Well, what you've done is reframed, right? So reframing is actually a mental and mindset technique that you can utilize, and it works in a lot of different ways, but that's one way you could do it. And I would say anytime you face a challenge or you're doing something really, really hard, the best thing you can do that you don't like doing but you have to do is to reframe like that. And okay, so what am I learning? How am I growing? What can I focus on that actually motivates me more? It's not that the other stuff goes away, because it still exists, but our brains are kind of pre-wired to obsess over all the negative stuff and the stuff we don't like, which can really impact what we put into it in a negative manner. So when you reframe, that really helps.
Yeah. I want to go back to what you were saying earlier. All right. So we talked about the achievement. We talked about you being unhappy. But what I'm curious about is, when you're feeling that way and you recognize that you're unhappy, it's almost like, how do you make yourself happy? Like, lately, I'm really intrigued by this idea of like, what is happiness and how do we make ourselves happy? So how did you go through the process? Like, what was your process of being like, okay, I'm unhappy and this is what's going to make me happy, and then I'm going to do this thing to make me happy? Because that's a challenging bridge to cross.
I mean, I think some of it goes back to, how do you define happiness? I think there is a misconception about what happiness is, honestly. And I had an amazing grandfather who taught me a lot about what happiness is. And so for me, I kind of recentered in on, well, what did Charlie teach me? Do you know what Lou Gehrig's disease is?
Not really.
It's basically a disease that attacks all your muscles and some of your organs and stuff, and everything kind of degenerates over time. And so your body kind of wastes away, and you're not able, over time, it affects your breathing and it kills you. And he had that late in life. And yet he was still very happy seeming, right? So he basically took whatever was and made the best of it. And he taught me, I didn't understand that he was really teaching me at the time, but later in life, I was able to look back and say, oh my gosh, this is what that is. And what I realized when I was going through this was, I felt completely, I guess the best word for me was unaligned. Like, if I would sit down and say, okay, this is what I value, this is what's important to me, this is what I want people to say about me, this is what I want people to say about how I show up every day, I didn't feel like I was living that out because I was so miserable. And so for me, it was getting back into that and figuring out, well, how do I do that? What are my real values? How do I want to redefine success based on what those are, so that I can start changing how I show up every day and how I make decisions and choices for myself? And once I started slowly doing that, I realized this is what he told me happiness really was. Happiness, to me at least, isn't about being positive all the time. You still get sad, you still get frustrated, you still get, you know, for me, it's about more like contentedness in the decisions you're making and how you're showing up every day. And that's really aligning to those values that are key to you and making sure you're living those out. So that's how, and it wasn't like one day that all just came to me. It was kind of a slow process. And some of it was thinking back on my grandfather and what he taught me. And some of it was that when I started looking at, okay, here are the miserable attorneys, which are like 80% of them. But there's these 20% who seem really happy and content, and nothing ever seems to faze them. Even when things go wrong, they're like, okay, yeah, that sucks, but I'm okay still, right? And that it was kind of an eye-opener when I really started paying attention to that, because that then reiterated, oh, that's what my grandfather taught me years ago. So that's how it really played out for me. And I just started taking little steps at a time. And the thing I've noticed, and I think when we're in that stuck place and we feel so miserable, we feel like nothing is ever going to change, or it's just going to be so hard. What I have found, and I've found this in my clients too, once you start taking that first step or two, even though a lot hasn't changed, your mentality changes because you're starting to do something about it. And it's like the curtain, the veil starts to lift up. And so you don't feel as stuck. You feel better. And that contentedness can actually start coming a lot quicker than you think.
Yeah. So, what are some of the things that you did and that you've seen clients do that are kind of those first steps to making change? I mean, like, what are a couple examples of that?
So I would say the biggest thing is accepting that you don't have control over a lot of the things that you've been trying to control. I think we lawyers, especially because we're trained to foresee risk and problems and plan around them, think that we can plan around everything, but you can't. And I guess if the last 2 years have been an indication of that, you can't, right? You can't control a lot of things in this world that do impact your life. And so some of this is really just a letting go and an acceptance piece of that. That's how life works, and that's okay. The other thing, and I've already really talked about this, but it bears repeating again, is getting to where you really reconnect to those values that make you, you, because they're kind of what color your whole world. That's how you see the world. That's how you perceive people. You need to really understand what those are, because if you don't, it's really hard then to make intentional choices that make sense for you to kind of lead you on that better path. So you got to kind of take some time for that. And there's a lot of what coaching does, FYI, but you could do it on your own, but you got to sit down and actually do it and start exploring that. And then it becomes more clear what steps, because when you identify those things, you see gaps, you see, oh, here's where I'm not aligned, here's what's going on. And you can start seeing, well, here's a step I can take to get me at least closer to where I want to be. Boundaries are big. I mean, I think one of the biggest things I see in attorneys is we think we can't say no, especially to clients. We have very few, sometimes even no boundaries with clients and even opposing counsel, colleagues, et cetera. And that's just not sustainable long term. And so that's one of the first things you have to, once you figure out what it is that's missing and the steps you need to take, usually one of those first actual steps is to create some real boundaries with people, because you need to start respecting yourself first in order to start feeling better. So.
Now, with the values, do you have any like do-it-yourself exercises? I mean, say someone's like, I don't want to hire a coach for whatever reason. And they're like, but I want to understand my values a little bit more, mm-hmm. carve out 2 hours or something. Like, how would you recommend somebody do that? I mean, it's just sort of a weird, kind of feels like branding to me. It's like, it's a thing, but like, it's also not a thing, you know, like, I mean, it's a thing, but like, it's hard to understand, you know?
So there are some questions you can start asking yourself. So number one is kind of project out end of my life. What do I want to be able to say about myself? Who, you know, about how I showed up, who I was, how I made people feel, what I want other people to say about me. And when you ask these questions, you're not really keying in on just accomplishments. You're really looking at you as a human, as what do you want people to say about you as a spouse, as a parent, as, you know, a kid, as a sibling, as a friend, as a, you know, whatever, colleague, you know, about how you showed up and how you were there for other people. Those start to expose some themes that then show some values. The other thing is to kind of look at, okay, when do I feel most upset with myself? Because I've either done something I feel like has just totally violated an important principle or rule that I have for myself. Usually that's a value. Or when have I not done something where that's, you know, exposed, like not taken action and really thought I should have? These types of questions are going to start exposing very similar themes, which are going to expose a really deep-seated values that you have. I also actually have a values exercise that if you want me to, I can send you the link to that and you can send people there. But that's a good way to start if you don't want to go down the path of having to go through a whole, you know, exercise of it.
I've actually heard – I haven't done this myself, but in this conversation, it's made me want to. Writing your – like what someone would say at your funeral, you know, like because, you know, it's at the end of your life, what they say about you, you know – and in my mind, I'm thinking, what would they say about me now, like based on facts, and what would I want them to say? And where's that gap, you know, because, you know, I've been transitioning into more family time and like more travel and like less focus on trying to build an empire. You know, it's, I'm just like, you know, just not as driven to that anymore. But that would be, I feel like that'd kind of be the same thing and would really drive home on your deathbed. What are people saying about you?
Yeah, I think it is a good exercise. The one thing I would say is sometimes it is hard to do that when you're not really facing it. Some people can, some people can't. So if you start to ask these questions and you do all of that and you have a hard time, then that's when that values exercise might be a little bit easier because it starts with those questions, but it goes into other ways of identifying them as well. I will say that when I remember the day I got my diagnosis for cancer and I hung up the phone, I was at work, I hung up the phone with my doctor and it was clearly bad, like really bad. And I remember flashback to my grandfather's funeral and how amazing he was and how so many people showed up. Like it was the most amazing thing. And I thought, who's going to show up to mine? And that really jolted me because I'm like, I have not made an impact. I have not helped people enough. I have not, you know, like that's for me, I did have that real moment where I was like, what if I do die this next year? What will people say about me? Who will even show up? And I didn't like what I foresaw if that, you know, if that was it for me. And so again, didn't know where that was going to lead, but ultimately that stuck with me. And it was one of the reasons why later I decided to leave my legal practice. So
yeah.
I do think that these last 2 years, though, have given a bit of that to people, you know, because it's disoriented us from our regular lives so much that people are stepping back and looking at themselves and saying, okay, who do I really want to be?
Yeah. And it's, you're right. It sort of extracted us from the routine that we're in and it's brought us home more. And I think that in some instances, that's probably broken apart families, you know, and I don't mean that in a bad way, but if you're not happy when you're around your spouse, then other ways it's brought it closer. And, you know, there has just been an incredible amount of shakeup over the last 2 years, you know, with COVID.
I think it's brought some truth to people that they weren't willing to see.
Yeah.
And yes, it can be very disruptive, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. As long as you learn how to deal with it appropriately, get the help you need if you're struggling with it, right?
Yeah. And I've like addictive tendencies to work. And, you know, whether it's like alcohol or work or too much social media or whatever it is, those like tendencies actually remove me from my real life. And I always in my mind say sedation, you know, it's like sedates me from like what's actually happening.
Right.
And then when you're pulled back out of that and like you don't have the work escape and then you're actually in your real life, you know, the truth comes out, and that truth can go a couple different ways.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I want to spend just a little bit of time just because it's early in the year and I know that you're big on goal setting, and I just want to, talk a little bit more tactical about, you know, this will come out in early 2022. So it'll be like a little bit late, but I feel like it's still applicable. What are, what advice do you have for people that are setting goals to help them, not ensure, but with, you know, get the highest probability of success for the year when it comes to goal setting?
Or,
you know, anything related to goals, you know, you kind of take it where you want.
Well, I think sometimes we think goal achievement and goal setting are the same, and they're very different, actually. And so I would say there's really two steps to this. Well, really three, right? Number one is the goal setting. Number two is the goal mapping or planning. Number three is the actual achievement. And all three are really important. Mm-hmm. So goal setting, I would say, is start with your bigger vision. I always like to tell my clients to go out 3 to 5 years. Where do you really want to see yourself? And as a whole, not just within your legal practice, that should be part of it, but also as a person, hobbies, as a parent, as a spouse, whatever it is. And create that vision for yourself and make sure it's very values-based. Start there. If you have a values-based vision, then you're going to have better goals, because goal achievement is hard. It's not always fun. It's not always easy. You're going to learn some hard things as you go along, and it's really easy to get demotivated. So you want to set really good goals for yourself that are based in that vision that help keep you motivated throughout the year when the hard stuff happens. So you start with the vision, then set your goals. And your goals are, don't ever go beyond a year. It's too far. Set the goals to get you closer to the vision. You may or may not ever fully achieve that, but at least you're going in the right direction, right? And FYI, your vision often changes every few years anyway, so you probably never will get to that exact vision anyway, and that's fine. So that's kind of my two cents on setting goals. Then you want a goal map, which basically means figuring out, what are my main strategies for goal achievement? And you want to be kind of intentional about this, because we all have strengths, gifts, talents, skills. Make sure you're utilizing them to the best of their advantage in the strategies that you choose. And if there are strategies, especially for your business, that need to be employed that you're not strong at, figure out how you can get help. You do not have to do it all. I think that's where one area where we tend to trip ourselves up. We think it's my goal. I have to do it all. No, you don't. You can hand stuff off. Lawyers are very bad. We're controlling people. We don't like letting go. We got to let go more, because you're going to get there faster, and it's going to be much more enjoyable if you learn to use the strategies that really play to your own strengths. Also, and this is especially the case with business development for lawyers. So I do a lot of business development coaching, and I find that a lot of lawyers think they're supposed to do a million different things to develop their business, because this other person is speaking and this other one is writing and these other person is doing networking at a certain, you know, in a certain area. And I have to do all of those. No, you don't. Do what works for you based on what your strengths are. You really only need one or two strategies, plus something that's something has to be networking oriented, because ultimately it's about relationship building. But pick a strategy that works for you, that you're strong at, that you're good at, that you enjoy doing. It's going to make business development much more successful and much more enjoyable. So you're more likely to stay consistent with it. So that's the goal mapping. And then the third part is the actual go out and do it. My biggest tip for that is, don't work towards your annual goal. Pull it back and go out 90 days. So what can I accomplish in the first 90 days? And go to that. That's going to help several things. We're not wired to go long term. It's really easy to get demotivated. It's easy to lose focus. It's easy to get, you know, distracted by bright, shiny objects and totally get off course. If we pull back and say, okay, so let's say you want to have $1 million business by the end of the year. Well, what do you need to achieve the first quarter? And work towards that, because that's more doable right now, and your brain is going to stay more motivated and focused on it. So those are my kind of quick tip strategies for each phase.
Yeah. Well, I love that. I feel like I've never heard it broken down that way, which is the goal setting, the goal mapping, and then the execution. And it makes total sense. It's actually, I feel like if that's not already a book, that could be a book, because it just breaks it down very easily. And I'm probably one of those people that tends to overcomplicate the goals. One thing that, what about, how do you, what's your cadence? I mean, I'm just gonna make the assumption that you follow this model. What's your cadence for staying on track and like keeping them top of mind? Is it like daily, weekly, monthly? I know that you break it down the annual to a quarterly, but then how do you kind of like keep it top of mind?
The day-to-day kind of process.
Yeah.
So I'm a planner, as a lot of lawyers can be. And so I actually use a paper planner. I'm really big on those. I have to write everything down. My husband's not like that. Everything is in his, you know, computer.
Yeah. You're describing my relationship with my wife too, which is she has a
So it really whatever works for you. But my recommendation is you have something that you then track and that you look at every, at least weekly, possibly daily. So, and that you calendar in time for actual goal achievement. So because, let's be honest, our goal achievement work is a very small portion of our work throughout the year. The rest of the time we're working on our client emergencies and issues, deals, cases, whatever, depending on what kind of lawyer you are. So you need to set aside time and guard it as if your practice, you know, really did depend upon it, because it does. We often don't put enough time towards it. But what I would say is we don't actually have to put as much time as we think if we're consistent. So what I do is I look every either Sunday night or Monday morning, depending on what's going on in my schedule. I have very active boys, so it can't always be Sunday. And I look at my week ahead and I say, okay, what are my top three priorities? Rule of three, never have more than three things at once that are a priority, because if you have more than three, you have too many. You just can't prioritize everything. These are the three things that absolutely must get done this week that relate to my goals. Sometimes it's not even three, by the way. It can be one thing. It can be two things, but no more than three. And I write them down, and then I look at my schedule based on my client calls and when I have other things going on, podcast recordings, because I have a podcast as well. And I fit into, okay, I'm going to do 1 hour here, 30 minutes here, whatever it is, to get these things done. And then I do them when I calendar them. So that keeps me consistent. One thing that I do tend to see is people like to overpack like their calendar with too many things. Your goals should be maybe 2 hours at most per week, probably, maybe less than that. It depends on how busy you are. The busier you are, the less time. I've had clients who do 30 minutes a day. That's fine for like follow-up and networking kind of a stuff. I have clients that do 2 hours at the end of the week or 1 hour at the beginning of the week or whatever, but you want something kind of consistent and regular in there for some of your activities that are more regular. And then other little pieces here and there as you need them. But it should not be a bulk of your calendar, because you've got to have time to do all of your other work.
So. Yeah. Yeah. And it depends on the type of goal. You know, if you're, if it's like a project that you're, is a new initiative, that could be a 2 hour block. But like you said, if it's like outbound, if it's a following up or networking or whatever, that could be 30 minutes a day. And you know, what I found a lot of times with goals is I actually kind of try to set goals now more, which are in alignment with what I'm already doing, but just giving me more direction and focus, so that I'm already kind of like doing these things. It's just, all right, let's like take, just like shift it 2 degrees this way so that, you know, hopefully it'll give me better impact. So
yes,
that's great. All right. Well, we've come up on time. Thank you so much. That was a great conversation. I loved it.
Thank you.
Your story is incredible. So thank you for sharing it and just being vulnerable. Tell the audience how they can get in touch with you if they want to learn more about working with you or just about yourself.
So there are two places they can find me. They can find me on my business website, which is coursecorrectioncoaching.com, or they can find my podcast, which is lifeandlawpodcast.com. So either place.
Perfect. All right. Well, thank you again. And everybody that's listening, thank you for listening. And we'll see you in the next episode.